today those boar studs are 25-30 years old, so we're starting to see some age on the facilities, and a lot of people are having tough decisions to make. I think there's an opportunity in updating the facilities to make some changes at a better animal welfare, boar flow, people safety, and I think if people are needing to update their facilities, don't just, you know, build a sow farm with stalls and a lab attached to it, because there's a lot of opportunity to make improvements when doing so.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Keep your feed safe from pathogens with VVC Premix. VVC Premix from DSM Firmenich is made up of ultra-pure benzoic acid and nature-identical flavorings to guard your feed and improve performance. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Start your journey with us at eastman.com. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet.
Oh, hello, and welcome back to Swine It. We have Dr. Reich back here with us. Last time, we talked a lot about pathogen transmission in semen, things to look for, things how to monitor for those, and a lot of practical tips to look after to ensure the semen health here going to your sow herd. So if you missed that one, that's a must listen. Go back to the previous episode and listen. In this part two here, we are gonna talk more about Dr. Reich also have extensive care experience updating or remodeling, building boar stud facility. So, Dr. Reich, can you talk about here the main points when you talk about updating or remodeling? What are we looking for?
A lot of boar studs, we kind of talked about in the last podcast, there was a big transition from artificial insemination from around, say, 15-20% of the industry. And even a lot of those were on-farm AI to over 90% in a really short period of time, probably 5-6 years. So during that time, a lot of boar studs were built. Mm-hmm. Today, those boar studs are 25-30 years old, so we're starting to see some age on the facilities, and a lot of people are having tough decisions to make. I think there's an opportunity in updating the facilities to make some changes at a better animal welfare, boar flow, people safety, and I think if people are needing to update their facilities, don't just, you know, build a sow farm with stalls and a lab attached to it, because there's a lot of opportunity to make improvements when doing so.
When it comes to raising healthy, strong swine, the environment makes all the difference. Pancopia provides better environmental conditions for swine so that they can grow faster and more efficiently. Grow smarter, grow stronger, and watch your profits soar. Pancopia, the future of swine care starts here. Visit pancopia.com today to learn more.
And last time you talked about some endemic bacteria that may be either in the environment or water lines, biofilm, right? So I suppose when you talk about updating remodeling the facility, water lines were something that we're just starting to talk more about importance as we speak, right? It was not important way back then when those got first built.
Yeah, and the water lines in the boar stud is important, you know, similar to like a nursery. I was talking more about the water system used to make extender. So back in the 90s, people would typically call their, you know, Culligan or those types. They'd come out and design a water system to make deionized water or reverse osmosis water. So this is a water preparation system that's typically off the lab or in a garage and then piped to the lab and used to make extender. So type 1 or 2 water. Mm-hmm. Those systems had very little consideration for bacterial contamination. It's not a extremely high priority to control bacteria in those water systems. The priority is to make water with a certain conductivity or resistivity is usually what you're targeting. So we do see a lot of contamination in those systems, and have had basically every single one that's updated. Typically, we, you know, have to have a kind of a powwow or a, you know, a meeting there at and educate the you know, the installers that the goal here is to not have bacteria. We understand your system will make you know, high purity water, but we can't have bacteria. So having like a loop type systems with recirculation, 0.1 micron filters, UV light, those types of things, and avoiding dead ends is probably the biggest thing. You look at any water system for a lab from the 90s or 2000s, there's always a lot of ports, input ports, drain ports, and dead ends. And that's where we get a lot of trouble with bacteria contamination. And those bacteria, when they get in the semen at a high enough load, then they cause agglutination and sperm cell membrane damage. So it doesn't, there's no problem drinking it. Purchased water, reverse osmosis purchased water from a grocery store, we typically find about 20% bacterial contamination in the purchased water. It doesn't hurt anyone, but we put it with the sperm, and if there's a high enough load there, then we cause some problems. As far as other, I kind of go off on a tangent there, I guess, but other things with That's the good. Facilities, with hygiene, a lot of improvements can be made. You know, again, it was the early boar studs. It was kind of a small gestation barn, basically with a lab connected. A lot of times we had water troughs. Boars are having to step over water troughs or step onto a hallway, step up into an alleyway with water troughs. The boars nowadays grow extremely fast. The Duroc breed is the most common breed worldwide now, and it's you know, very fast growing boars. Inherently with that comes OCD. So we really should not have facilities where boars are having to, you know, clear obstacles or can get their legs caught in different things. We go with a bigger stall size now. It was common in the 90s to have 24 or 26 inch wide crates, which at the time were wider than the sow stalls. But that was mostly crossbred boars that slept on their sternum, or maybe at a 45 degree angle. Today, the Duroc boars, sleep, they're side sleepers. So they lay on their side. So either they lay completely on their side, or often they have, their front legs. They might be at about a 45 degree angle on their front legs, and then they'll kick their rear legs out to the side. So if they're in a 24 or 26 inch stall, typically from their hock down is in the neighbor's stall. So the neighbor gets up, lays on their legs, they already have OCD issues inherent. And so we need wider stalls. If someone's remodeling a boar stud today, we have to have wider stalls. So we're looking more at like a 28 to 30 inch stall, possibly even 32 inch stalls now on the remodels.
That's
Other things are just, you know, boar movement to and from the collection area. Totally different on a sow farm than a boar stud. Sow farm, you want little wider alleyways. The sows move in groups. They sort of follow each other. You got someone following behind with a panel, you know, a group of four, five, six, eight sows. And that works really well. You don't want a narrow thing where they're constrained and they jam up. Boars, we're not moving them in groups. You have to move them one at a time. So, and we can't let them turn around in the alleyway. That's just a massive safety hazard. And so typically in the boar stud, we want a narrower alleyway, normally a you know, 20, 28, at the most 31, 32 inches would be the absolute widest alleyway you'd want in a boar stud. You don't want staff to have to be fighting all the way down or all the way to the return from some boar that can curl his head around you know, stop. You're not going to push these boars. You know, some of them are 600, 700, 800 pounds. You know, you're not going to jam your knees in the back of a boar and push them when they go in reverse. So you got to keep the flow moving. And that means a narrow alleyway.
Pretty heavy.
Collection areas, also a lot of changes. You know, a lot of opportunity to improve the flow there. Collection pens, did some work in late 90s there with a narrow collection pen where you'd sit outside the collection pen. And showed, published that and showed that that was a dramatic difference in the amount of time for the boar to leave the collection pen. A lot of times they want to guard their genes, so to speak, after collection. It's not every boar. It might be 1 in 5. It might be 1 in 10, but they get pretty riled up after they jump off the dummy and they're trying, if they're in the wild, they're trying to stop another boar from inseminating the same sow. So they're guarding their genes, and it's a common behavior. So a narrow collection pen with the person sitting keeps the person out of harm's way. And if it's narrow where they can't just spin around, basically you have your exit gate and they're going to find their way out the exit gate without any harm to a person. Mm-hmm. Those are big things. The collection area itself, we've gone to a raised collection area on a lot of studs, but not a pit. There was more so internationally. You saw in the late 90s, early 2000s collection pits, and it looked real good in the on the picture where, someone could stand up and collect a boar, but who wants to stand on concrete for 4 or 5 hours, even with a pad? That's pretty hard on backs. So
yeah,
we typically have the collection area raised up anywhere from 6 inches to 1.5 feet. People can sit on a chair or on a bucket, rest their elbows on their knees while they're collecting. And this is just a lot more ergonomic and friendly. We move the collection dummy real close to the gate. They reach through the gate through a slide opening. They can also take their blood sample. Everything's right there. You can see everything really well, and just a lot less injuries in that collection process. The warm-up stall also, in the old days, most people did not have a warm-up stall. They bring boars down, open up the gate. The boar comes running down the alley. He goes in the collection pen. Well, the first thing they do when they get in a new pen is they defecate. Mm-hmm. So now you got all that manure majority in the collection pen, and the majority of the bacteria that we have issues with, as far as we talked in the last podcast about the toxins, the majority of the bacteria, mm-hmm. all of them are coming from the feces or the prepuce. So we had all that feces and E. coli was a really big deal in the past. I don't think we've had an E. coli isolate in my lab for probably at least 5 years. Wow. Just changing the collection pen where the boar is going to a warm-up stall, they defecate in there. 95% of them will defecate in there. And then they come in the collection pen and you hardly ever see manure in the collection pen. So that basically completely solved that. We also talked about Enterococcus in the past. Enterococcus was a huge problem in the past. Just changing that collection pen design and collection technique, we hardly ever see an Enterococcus anymore. So those are the types of things can be updated. And then as far as air filtration, air filtration and air conditioning, the majority of the studs in the U.S. are air conditioned and with air filtration now. A lot more purebred boars than we would have had in the past. They're not as tolerant, I would say, to heat stress. So the air conditioning makes a lot of sense. It keeps the area dry, so there's less bacteria. And when we had cool cells running 24/7 during the heat of summer, we saw a lot of problems with bacteria in the semen. We don't see any seasonality to bacteria in the semen anymore with the air-conditioned boar studs. So that's an opportunity for updating. And I think those are kind of some of your big hitters.
A lot about health, welfare, incredible. How can understanding welfare can make it work in your favor, right? To avoid some of those problems that you used to have. Mm-hmm. And now it's you use welfare and your benefit.
Yeah, even the slat width, the slot width on the slats. In the past, people kind of decided to use a lot of places used a breeding slat. The slot opening is pretty small. The boar's manure doesn't feed through there very well, and so you can get a lot of buildup in the back alleys. With those boar studs in the past, while people are walking up and down those alleys, anyone that's walked down a large sow farm in the back alley knows that, especially around against the outside wall, it's pretty cumbersome. You gotta kind of watch every step you take. Well, imagine doing that, taking boars back home. You just simply increase that slot opening a little bit, or reduce the top of the slat and have a rounded edges. And all of a sudden that manure feeds through a lot better, and it's a lot safer for people walking those return alleys, and for the boars too.
Yeah, a lot of details. And going back to air filtering, you said that most will be air filtered, right? If you have to build a new one, is there a preferred, without getting too much into the weeds, but positive, negative filtration, any big tips on there?
I would say the majority, any new construction is probably going to be positive pressure air filtration for a boar stud, because the air conditioning makes that very feasible. It's instead of ag ventilation fans, we're dealing with blowers. You might have 5 or 6 blowers pushing air into the attic and then down through the inlets. Started air conditioning boar studs in that sort of 2006, 2008 range, about 3 or 4 years after air filtration. The first farms we did were boar studs in 2004. The positive pressure is tough on the building longevity. We did a fair number of retrofits back in that day. There's a lot of issues with the base plates around the baseboards on the top of the concrete. Stem walls are not sealed very well in those old barns, so air leaks out. Now the air leaking out is a lot different than the air that leaks in with a negative pressure. It's cold air, yes, but it's air that's doesn't have ammonia in it. It doesn't have animal dander, humidity, all those things. Mm-hmm. We're pushing out. We really got to be conscious of air leaking out through the building structure. And there's been a number of boar studs that have dramatically shortened the building life with positive pressure, because there was a lot of leaking air out. From a disease entry, it sounds great, because everything's leaking out, nothing can leak in. And for the most part, true, you can still overpower a wall fairly easily. A positive pressure barn, you can still have outside air pushing in if the wind's blowing. A 20 mile an hour wind is able to overcome anything under about a 0.2 static pressure. So you can still have that overpowering, but it is a lot safer with the positive pressure. We just got to be conscious of the building structure and probably expect a shorter life. And in new construction, that's extremely important, making sure everything is sealed up and all the air is exiting through the pit opening or through a sidewall opening as intended. So yeah, those are important things to consider.
And what are the other aspects for biosecurity? Any changes or any must or non-negotiables beyond filtration?
I think the whole people entry process, a lot of these things that are being incorporated into other farms over the last, 10, 15 years, we adapted, the early 2000s. There was some good, really good practical work. Sandy Amass at Purdue, Scott D and some others. And boar studs, you're typically dealing with a staff, 6, 8 people in a smaller facility. Was pretty easy to incorporate a lot of those things, like lunch entry. Most boar studs, the staff do not bring lunches in. They isolate food through like a 7-day process. So all supplies come in to a room, it's closed and locked for 7 days, and then we move it in. Just not worth taking the risk. A lot of my clients been doing that since 2004. So 20 years, we haven't brought in, lunch in a paper sack and have to worry about where it was 10 minutes before the person showed up on the farm, or if they met someone at the Casey's or those types of things. It's really not that hard. Same thing with the supplies. More than 10, 15, 20 years, a lot of boar studs been, doing 2 or 3 nights downtime. Now we sort of do a 7-day process. So if remodeling or updating facility, those rooms need to be bigger. In the past, sometimes things were brought through a sort of a pass-through window, but you have a lot of bulky supplies. the collection bags, cups for collection cups, extender, the bags that are going to the sow farms, bags or tubes used for insemination. A lot of that stuff is really bulky. So that's something, if remodeling or updating, making those rooms bigger so you can hold supplies for a lot longer time and just completely eliminate that risk and those issues. Other biosecurity, I wouldn't say there's a lot of changes really that have been made in the last 20 years. A lot of the things being done on sow farms have been doing for quite a long time on the boar studs.
Yeah, like you said, the previous episode, the cost of mistakes here, cost of getting the boar stud with outbreaks, right? Birds or something else, it's going to be very, very high. So gotta be a professional in biosecurity. All right. So we talked a lot about disease transmission. We talked about considerations for animal welfare, human safety, handling the boars. Anything else we kind of missed that you wanted to go back and add? Or
yeah, I think one thing would be kind of this question about pens versus stalls. It's a kind of hotly debated, has been hotly debated in the past and rules incorporated in other countries. You got, Europe with a 6 square meter requirement for pens. Mm-hmm. A lot of these rules were put in place before the building costs went up to build a new boar stud now with air filtration or air conditioning. A lot of times you're looking at 6, 7, 8 times the cost of the facility that's replacing from 25 years ago. So looking at it from a people safety point, to get into a very large pen, like a 6 square meter pen is about 64 square feet. That's a pretty good size pen. We've had pens mm-hmm. like that as sick pens. A lot of boar studs still have pens roughly that size as sick pens. The staff that we have today are terrified going in those pens. There's a strategy to go in there. I do a lot of training with people, showing them how to go in those pens. You have to be very assertive. You walk in the pen, you go straight to the side of the boar. People's instincts is to walk in the pen scared and try to stay away from the boar. And it really doesn't work. Their pivot point's on their shoulder and they're curious. They might not be intending to cause any harm whatsoever, or they might be intending to cause harm, but they can spin really quick with that pivot point of their shoulder and it's really mm-hmm. difficult to get away. And a lot of people are scared to go in those pens. And that's, includes other countries where they've incorporated those rules. If you go with a smaller pen, that slows the boar down and you can sort of get him lined up with his head facing the other way, you can easily enter, go straight to the boar's side and be in contact with them right behind their shoulder. They calm down. And it's just a lot safer environment. So if using pens, I would definitely recommend a narrow pen that the boar can just spin around. So, we're looking, a lot of studs looking at like a 5 foot wide pen and a pen that's basically half the square feet of the European standard. It also reduces the cost of the building dramatically. And I think we don't see any benefit in a bigger pen. If you really value and want to see that the boar can turn around whenever he feels like, I get that, but they can still turn around in the small pen. Reality is they're sleeping 18 hours a day. Boars, they go to the collection, they go back and they sleep, they get up to eat, and they might get up to urinate once or twice a day, here and there, but the majority of time they're sleeping. So it doesn't really matter if they're in 64 square feet or 30 square feet. You got to consider people safety. People are getting hurt. You have work comp claims and you can't operate the facility without people. So I think there's a lot of emphasis on that in the future, just the people safety. We need smaller pens that take into account people safety.
Yeah. Well, gotta remind folks here, this is the Swine It podcast. If you like it, I'm sure you do. Take a moment to love it, like it, share it, post it, repost it, whatever works in your platform.
Optimize growth in baby pigs with Uniferon 200 iron dextrin from Pharmacosmos. Field studies have demonstrated 2 1-milliliter doses of Uniferon 200 can lead to a 7-pound increase at market weight, along with a 5% increase in average daily gain. 2 1-milliliter doses of Uniferon 200 are recommended to ensure enhanced growth and performance from weaning to market. To learn more, visit us.uniferon.com/research.
Dr. Reichs, how about, you know, we've been talking a lot about boar studs, and as we should, right? You're an expert on this, but I know that that's not what keeps you busy 100% of the time, right? So what else have been keeping you busy regarding swine health and production?
Well, that keeps me busy as far as swine health and production. I've got the semen, the andrology lab over the over here, and we're always looking to do practical research to try to solve problems that the boar studs have. We try to put that out there in presentations, either at my seminar or other places. Working a lot with looking at some of the bacteria in water systems over the last year. African swine fever is a big, did a big project in Germany a couple of years ago that's been published, and have another project coming up. PCR testing, bacterial testing for semen and boar studs. And then I do a lot with biosecurity auditing and ventilation and filtration auditing. Kind of was forced to learn ventilation through the air filtration and helping people design, remodeling south arms, how many filters you need, where should the filter be placed, what kind of fans work, what kind of fans don't, what's the CFM per sow that you really should have, and, different things like that, I guess.
And you mentioned some, you have done in the past some trials as well. That still keeps you busy, or?
Yeah. Yep. We're.
So what kind of trials?
Some of those I've mentioned, just anything, where we see a problem in the boar stud industry or reproduction or air filtration, mm-hmm. and identifying the problem and trying to test, different solutions. That's kind of what keeps me going, I guess.
I see. Yeah. So one-stop shop for boar studs and right. And artificial insemination success. Just one more bonus question here. Coming back, sure I've asked that before, but how young can should the boars be to start in production? As you thinking about those farms that need to repop for some reason, how aggressive can you be?
You can train boars. You really 5.5 months of age on, depending on the breed. They're especially the Duroc boars mature a little bit later reproductively. So even if you train them at 5.5 months, there's typically not much, if any, sperm there. And there's a lot of abnormalities. So, the Duroc boars really don't ramp up much until they're about 8 months of age when it's worth your while, I guess, collecting them once a week and having them in production. Other breeds, in that 7 months of age, pretty normal. We'll see decent semen quality. The young boars, the sperm quality isn't typically as good. You see a lower percentage of normal acrosome. You see higher abnormalities and a lot lower sperm. So kind of turns out to be a labor issue. You can collect them, but if they're giving you, 30 billion sperm total, it's kind of hardly worth the effort and the cost of the labor, and just, wait till they get a little bit older and make it worth your while.
Mm-hmm. It depends on the breed, depends on the individual, but the microscope will tell you.
Yeah, there's still a fair bit of variation in when they mature, and even in the number of number of doses or total sperm output, you got quite a range in there, and anywhere from 50 billion to 150 billion, 200 billion sometimes. Just boars standing right next to each other. There's a strong correlation with testicular circumference, but then also age. They increased in production quite a bit from kind of 6 months of age up to about a year.
All right. And is there a cutoff? As they get older, some after which some specific age, you really don't really want to collect them anymore?
You see a lot of variation there too. Some of them just stop. They just lose interest. You don't see it very often because normally the index, most all the genetic companies are going off index. So you might get index updates once a month, every couple months, every quarter. And the new boars coming off tests normally are better. If they're doing what they intend to do, the new boars coming off tests have better index. So new boars come in and the old ones go out. So we don't often see boars like age out unless it's like a boar that came in really high index and has survived survived the test of time, I guess, as far as the criteria generating the numbers going into the index. Sometimes we do have boars, 3-4 years old on the steps. Usually they came in with a really high index or they happen to ring the bell on, the trait that's driving the index. But even on those, a lot of variation. Some do decrease in sperm production after 3-4 years of age. Others are fine.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at FortivaImpact.com. Vaxinova, formulate to your needs, custom-made vaccines. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Uniferon 200 from Pharmacosmos, the iron dextrin for baby pigs, which promotes faster growth. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost pig health and performance. In swine production, performance is everything. At Lupta, we know your success depends on measurable results. That's why our feed additives go beyond improving palatability. They're scientifically designed to enhance feed intake, support animal well-being, and drive optimal growth. From the wean transition to periods of stress, our solutions deliver what matters most: resilient animals, improved performance, and a stronger bottom line. Backed by decades of expertise and a commitment to innovation, Lupta is redefining swine nutrition. Because when your herd thrives, so does your business. Lupta, create, connect, inspire. Visit lupta.com to learn more.
All right. No, thank you. Thank you so much for your time here with us. We do have the final questions that SwineIt folks like us to ask everyone. And those three easy questions are, in your experience dealing with different people, what differentiates successful professionals?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I thought a lot about that. In my world, I think it's identifying problems and then, reaching out and collaborating with others to find a solution to the problem. I think you see sometimes where there's people sort of trip, and I do it myself, trip over myself for weeks to months to years about a problem. And I think just to step back. And it's like, why am I still doing that? Why are we still talking about this problem? We haven't created a solution. It happens in the boar studs a lot. One of the most common is there's a lot of movement in the collection area. You think about a 400 boar stud. There's 400 boars every week going to a warm-up stall, to a collection pen. About 30%, 25% of them don't jump the first time. You can stand there for 45 minutes if you want and hope they jump, or you can recycle them back to the warm-up. We typically recommend after 5 or 10 minutes, recycle them back to the warm-up. Well, you see a lot of times where the gating doesn't match up, or, they're big. They gates move and sometimes, a support post all of a sudden shifts over an inch and now the gate doesn't hit anymore. So now they're using bungee straps. And I always think about that, like, gosh, let's take a step back here. You've been bungee strapped. This gate moved, 2 months ago, probably? So over the last 2 months, 8 weeks times 400. So 3,200 times you unhooked and unhooked. You hooked and unhooked this bungee strap. Someone should have just stopped and took an hour and moved the post. But I think that happens a lot in our lives and every day is, you know, something that's not right, that's causing you wasted time or doesn't make any sense. Just stop, you know, dedicate the time to solving the problem and then move on from there. And I think that separates a lot of successful professionals.
Well, how about your favorite pig related resource? Be a book, a web page, or something else?
Yeah, I read the typical swine. I listen to almost all the Swine It podcasts. I read the news feeds. Some of the stuff that's really made a difference for me was some of the just real practical reproduction related articles put out by some of my mentors, like Billy Flowers. He had a series in National Hog Farmer, I think it was, for a number of years. Wayne Singleton, Don Leavis, they're both long retired now, but you know, just guys that saw, basically answered questions to that people wanted an answer for, and you know, they figured out a practical solution, and they're willing to put it out there for everyone to learn. So I like, I still go back to a lot of these articles now. Some of them are 15, 20, 30 years old. And I think sometimes we try to create new problems when the solution was already there. You know, two decades ago, you just have to go looking for it. So new information isn't always new information. You know, if you dig deep enough, a lot of questions, someone else already figured it out. You just have to find where it's at.
You don't always need to invent the wheel.
Yeah. You don't always have to reinvent the wheel. You do see it a lot. You see a lot of people, and even at conferences, you know, you see a lot of presentations, and sometimes like, gosh, I'm pretty sure I heard that same thing about 25 years ago.
And people present like it's new.
Yeah.
About your favorite non-pig related book or resource or kit?
My favorite, they're old now, but my brother tipped me off on these, but I really like the old Freakonomics books. I think it really brings a lot of perspective to just the chance opportunity that you have. You never know what the opportunity is. If it's something you're interested in and you dive in and figure it out when other people don't have the time or aren't interested in figuring it out. You know, it talks about just the chance opportunities of different events. And I think that relates a lot to the swine industry. You see a lot of really successful family farm operators that are, a lot of those guys are in their like 60s now. You know, there was an opportunity in the early 90s. They took it. Same in our industry, in the veterinary industry. There's a lot of, you know, people that specialized in swine production or different areas of swine production. While there was a lot of growth there in the 90s, you know, had success. You've taken advantage of opportunity in some of the stuff that you've done over the years. And it's really sort of fascinating to me. Like, if you know, take advantage of the opportunity you have at the time. And if you're interested in it and have a passion, you know, it's more than likely going to work out.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for this two-part series with Dr. Darwin Reichs here. It was a lot of fun, and thank you all for sticking around and listening, and we'll see you next time. Thank you again, Dr. Darwin.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.